Again, hi everybody. We're back. Scott's back. Scott, let's get to the point that you were talking about the bunker buster bombs, and you were talking about how they're capable of destroying the Iranian nuclear facilities.
Well, they're capable of physically destroying a facility. Except there might be some facilities that are so deeply underground that conventional weapons can't deal with it. And in fact, if you go deep enough, even a nuclear weapon can't deal with it. Not, you know, maybe if we dropped a sequential B6112s, you know, hit it and then hit it again. But history shows you're not going to necessarily destroy what you think you're destroying, that you might be bombing empty shells, that the high value equipment will be dispersed. But also the reality is the brain trust. You can't shut that down unless you kill everybody. And I don't think even the Israelis are capable of killing everybody. So, you know, this whole concept of going out after Iran's nuclear program is stupid. What needed to be done was to take advantage of the fact that the Iranians had made a political decision that they didn't want a nuclear bomb, and then to work with the existing protocols and, you know, within the International Atomic Energy Agency is mandated by the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty to put in place a monitoring regime to ensure that Iran stuck with, you know, Iran has every right now at the end of this, to be honest, to say there's no longer such a thing as the Iranian exception. That Iran will have a nuclear program the same as every other signatory and subjected to the same constraints and restrictions and monitoring, but there will never again be an Iranian exception. Why? You can't trust the IAEA. The Iranian exception became an Iranian intelligence collection, an intelligence collection platform against Iran. And it also just creates an inherent prejudice against Iran. You know, Japan loses unbelievable amounts of plutonium every year. They just don't know where it went. You apply the Iranian standard to this, they would say it's a diversion for a nuclear bomb. We have to, you know, sanction Japan and shut Japan down. No, I think that the day of the Iranian exception is over. Iran's earned that right because the IAEA has misused its authority. And the hypocrisy of the IAEA. Do you remember the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine? And when the Ukrainians attacked it with drones and artillery, the IAEA ran it. Grossi ran in there. Oh, my God, this is the most dangerous thing in the world. They're attacking a nuclear power plant. This could be a Chernobyl type event. We have to bring in international troops to secure this area. Huh. Now we have Iran's nuclear infrastructure being attacked by Israel, bombarded. Not a peep. I mean, Grossi's gone on and said, this shouldn't happen. It's a violent. Well, why isn't he running to the Security Council? Why isn't the Security Council holding emergency meetings demanding that that Israel stop this irresponsible behavior? Hypocrisy. Hypocrisy.
Scott, when we talk about the policy of the United States in the Middle East, they're talking about 7 countries to be destroyed, that Iran is the last one. But it doesn't seem that would be the case. The list goes on and on. And here is what Netanyahu years before talked about, the way that he sees.
Mission that we have is to prevent a militant Islamic regime from meeting up with nuclear weapons, or from nuclear weapons meeting up with a militant Islamic regime. The first is called Iran. The second is called Pakistan. Because if these radical regimes have nuclear weapons, they will not obey the rules that have been obeyed in the last almost 7 decades.
The list goes on and on. And how I think the big question in the mind of the United States and the policymakers would be how, to what extent they want to risk a bigger war, maybe an atomic war. Is that going to happen if they get along with Netanyahu and this sort of strategy on his part?
Well, we know Iran doesn't have nuclear weapons. There's been no evidence provided that sustains it. They were a threshold state. But I think under this current situation, they're not going to be able to rapidly convert to a nuclear state. If that was to happen, that should have happened before the bombing. I don't think there's any danger of that happening now. Again, could be proven wrong, but I don't think Pakistan is a nuclear weapon state. In Pakistan, according to some sources, has made it clear that if Israel used nuclear weapons against Iran, Pakistan would retaliate with its own nuclear arsenal. So here we have a chance of this conflict going nuclear. I mean, and the United States needs to pay attention to this. And Pakistan, I mean, it's just sort of sickeningly hilarious that Israel gets to call Pakistan, you know, a radical Islamic state capable of behaving irresponsibly. But it's Israel that launched the Pearl Harbor attack against the sovereign nation in violation of international law. And it's Israel who has the illegal nuclear program unmonitored by the world. Israel is the radical state. And it's time that we recognize that. Israel is probably the single most dangerous nation on the planet, the one that's capable of producing the most instability on the planet. Israel is a cancer to the world, which is why, I mean, as much as I regret the suffering of the Iranian people, this is the chance. Break Israel's back. Don't let up. Don't let them survive. Destroy this nation. Destroy this cancer. And I'm not talking about, you know, a second Holocaust. But what I'm saying is the Netanyahu government's got to go. Got to go. And it's losing this war right now. And Iran must continue until Israel, until Netanyahu's government is exposed as a government that has failed the Israeli people. You bring about the collapse of the Netanyahu government. You install a new government that's ready to negotiate a cessation of conflict where Israel will recognize Iran's right to have a nuclear program. And now we're starting to get into a position where, you know, maybe we can get behavioral changes on the part of Israel. Maybe we can open the door to, you know, get to Israel's nuclear arsenal. We can do that, but this won't happen if Trump and Netanyahu are able to fulfill their dream of bringing down the Khomeini government. Then Israel will just become out of control because, as you said, it doesn't stop. Where does it stop? Turkey has been identified as a threat. Erdogan right now is talking about the absolute requirement for Turkey to build a ballistic missile capability that mirrors the Iranian one, because Turkey knows at some point in time the wrath of the Zionists will be headed in his direction. He wants to replicate what Iran has done. Saudi Arabia, Egypt, it will never stop. The Israeli cancer will consume all. France, America. I mean, they're threatening us. Now, some people say the Israeli cancer has already taken over America, and I think the proof in that is Donald Trump's behavior. But even my dog agrees. But as tragic as this situation is, there's a historic opportunity here, because for the first time, a nation capable of physically destroying Israel is engaged in a life and death struggle with Israel. And if this war continues for another couple of weeks, Israel's over. It's a postage stamp sized nation. All of its critical infrastructure is located in very confined spaces. And by the time Iran's done, none of these spaces will be left standing.
Donald Trump was asked if he understands the reports on March, Tulsi Gabbard reported that Iran is not pursuing nuclear weapons. And he said, he doesn't care about what she said. And Iran was close to reach nuclear weapon. That's why Israel attacked Iran. And here is what Steve Bannon said on his program, on the program and podcast.
Gabbard not invited to the Camp David meeting all day?
You know why.
Why Tulsi Gabbard still to the American public has said the last public statement is that the program was not back up and running. And now we have from Beebe by himself on Fox by Brent Baer that the thing was 12 to 13 months away. It wasn't this weekend.
I know.
And this is by his own thing. And we also know that it was a decapitation, as we said on Friday. It wasn't just about the nuclear program. It's a decapitation of total leadership. So this is a total regime change, which, by the way, you may have a plan for regime change. It's fine. But you got to bring the American people along. Let me go back.
He just mentioned something crucial. It seems that somehow they decided to remove Tulsi Gabbard from the decision, the room of decision makers.
Yeah, this is critical because Tulsi Gabbard is the director of national intelligence. She administers the totality of the intelligence community, and she's part of her duties is to prepare and deliver a presidential daily briefing. Now, she'll use a proxy for that, but her office is the one that is supposed to be feeding the intelligence picture to the American president. So when the president of the United States says, I don't care what she says, and when the president of the United States is acting on information that is 180 degrees off from what Tulsi Gabbard briefed the United States Congress, the National Threat Assessment, you have to ask the question, where is he getting his intelligence from? And this is the real crux of the issue. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard, and with all due respect, and I think highly of her, she needs to resign. She's not, right now, she's just facilitating this nonsense. She needs to resign, liberate herself, and start speaking out against this president, who's literally a madman. What we're seeing here appears to be a replication of what happened in the lead up to the invasion of Iraq back in 2002, 2003, where the President of the United States, together with Donald Rumsfeld, so George W. Bush, Rumsfeld, backed by Cheney, created their own intelligence capability. Douglas Feith created a special intelligence unit within the Pentagon that cherry-picked data, spun data, and just basically fabricated lies for the president to justify going to war. He was aided and abetted in this by the Israelis. Amos Gilad, I think, was the director of Amman at the time, and he straight up was lying. How do I know? Because I worked with the Israelis for the 4 years prior to that, and I know what they knew about Iraq, and I know that they knew that Iraq didn't have weapons of mass destruction, and I know they had made certain conclusions about Saddam Hussein. I just want to remind your audience, how serious this is. In 1991, Saddam Hussein, during Desert Storm, fired some 49 Scud missiles into Israel. Now, the war ended, and we said we were going to use United Nations inspectors to disarm Iraq. But the Israeli government had determined that as long as Saddam Hussein was in power, that was the threat. So they began a plan to assassinate Saddam Hussein. And this plan was ready to be implemented in October, November of 1993. In fact, they were doing the final dress rehearsal of this assassination attempt in a military camp that's in present-day Gaza. And the dress rehearsal went bad, and five Israeli commandos were killed, and the plan got scrapped. But the Israelis still believed at that time that the only way they could get rid of the threat was to kill Saddam Hussein. And so it wasn't until the weapons inspectors, me, went to Israel in 1994 and confronted Yuri Sagei, who was the head of Amman, that the only path out of this for Israel was to work with the inspectors to ensure that we did the job right. And we were able to get the Israelis to agree that Saddam wasn't the threat, that weapons of mass destruction could be curtailed, and all this. I don't know why the dogs are barking, but they are. The intelligence picture is a fickle thing. But assassination has always been part of the Israeli plan, the concept of decapitation strikes, etc. But the Israelis in 1998, the point I was trying to make is when I left, Israel had agreed that Iraq had been disarmed, fundamentally agreed. But the new director of intelligence for Amman was Amos Gilad. And Amos Gilad changed everything. He began, as soon as I left, he began fabricating, making it up. The Israelis went from being honest brokers to being dishonest purveyors of disinformation. And the Israelis were backing Douglas Feith, feeding him crap. And Feith would feed the president crap. And as a result, we ended up going to war. The Israelis did it. Amos Gilad, I'm naming names, guys. I'm naming the name. I'm naming the organizations. And we know this. We know this took place. So today, who's feeding the president information? We know he has an insanely close relationship with Bibi Netanyahu, which means he has an insanely close relationship with Israeli intelligence, which means that somebody in Israel or a proxy is briefing him on that. Who? AIPAC? As Hegseth, his little, puppy in the Pentagon, has Hegseth created a new intelligence unit working with the Israelis? Because we know that Kirilla already has colluded with the Israelis on a bombing attack, because Kirilla can't brief the White House on American military options in Iran, knowing that Israel was going to launch an attack without deconfliction. Again, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, guys. I'm just telling you straight up. You can't have the Israelis launching an attack and the Americans coming in unless you have had already deconfliction worked out, that the two plans will coincide. They know how to shut things off and on. We've been preparing for this attack with the Israelis for some time now, and the President of the United States has been receiving intelligence information from the Israelis fed through some sort of proxy, whether it's indirectly through AIPAC or through the Pentagon. Tulsi Gabbard's not the person, and yet Tulsi Gabbard's the one that got before the United States Senate and was confirmed, meaning that the American people believe that the president is receiving his intelligence from the lady who was confirmed by the Senate to do that job. Somebody's feeding him intelligence who wasn't confirmed by the Senate. Somebody's feeding him intelligence who isn't held accountable to the American people. This is wrong. This is fundamentally wrong. It's a very, very dangerous situation. Israel is a threat to the United States. This president one time knew about it. I mean, he was the one who said, we can't afford to get involved in yet another war that costs us trillions of dollars, thousands of lives. He condemned Obama, rightfully so, for threatening to attack Iran. And, he did the same thing with Biden. He said, I am the peace president. Turns out that was all a lie. He was working with the Israelis back in November, colluding on this. I mean, this president is a risk to the American people because he is doing things that are fundamentally unconstitutional. To have an American president doing the bidding of the state of Israel in a manner that could get the United States involved in a war of such proportions in the Middle East that it defines energy security, it could potentially the use of nuclear weapons. And let me talk about that for a second, because some people say, okay, so you nuke Iran, so what? Well, I've had conversations with the Russians, and this is the Russian position. They will not be the first to use tactical nuclear weapons. Russia's made that clear. But once America breaks that taboo, Russia will use tactical nuclear weapons, and so will everybody else. It'll become commonplace. So the privilege we've enjoyed as a people living under a nuclear umbrella where nuclear weapons haven't been used in anger since the end of the Second World War, that's going to end. And they'll become commonplace. And each time they're used, it could lead to escalation. This is where we're talking about. This is an insane man that's in the White House right now, a sick man, a fundamentally sick man. And he's out of control. The people who are supposed to be feeding him the intelligence aren't allowed to talk to him. He won't let them. So who is talking to him? And that's a fair question. Why isn't Congress demanding that answer? The American people should be.
It seems that the MAGA base of Donald Trump is just, on the case of Iran, they're just getting a lot of tensions from within, and because of Tucker Carlson and people like Tucker Carlson, they don't believe that the United States would benefit from a new endless war in the Middle East. And here is what Tucker Carlson said and the response of Donald Trump.
I think he's a deeply humane, kind person. And I am saying this because I'm really afraid that my country's going to be further weakened by this. I think we're going to see the end of American empire, obviously. Other nations would like to see that, and this is a perfect way to scuttle the USS America on the shoals of Iran. But it's also going to end, I believe, Trump's presidency and effectively end it. And so that's why I'm saying this.
What do you mean by that? That's coming from you.
Look, I knew Bush. I knew George W. Bush. We had, you know, family connections to Bush. I knew Bush personally. I still see Bush sometimes. And, you know, of course, he hates me, and he does because I criticized him on Iraq. And that war is the sum total, from a historical perspective, of his administration. But I knew him, and he had all kinds of plans for the things that he wanted to do. But once
domestically,
right, to improve the country.
Right.
And you may agree or disagree, but like in his mind, he wasn't just about the invasion of Iraq in March of 2000.
Oh, no, no. He was going to redo Social Security.
100%.
All types of, he was going to take care of the entitlements issue.
And he really thought it was going to work.
Yep.
And you could laugh at that or whatever, but the point is, the second you get enmeshed in a real war, not a fake, let's go bomb the villagers and declare success, though we don't even have a good track record. Like, why are the Houthis still there?
No,
there's a whole other question, right, which is how prepared is the U.S. military for a real conflict? And the answer is totally unprepared. Scary unprepared. I don't think people understand that. But anyway, the only reason I'm saying any of this is because I really, really care.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that there is anybody in the Trump administration to understand what Tucker Carlson and these people who are extremely concerned about the future of the conflict. They don't want to understand.
Well, he surrounded himself with Zionists. So this is the conflict they wanted. This is the conflict they've been praying for. Look at Mike Huckabee, you know, former governor. Now he's the ambassador of the United States to Israel, sending some sort of, you know, biblically themed, you know, message to the president. History has picked you. This is your time. Okay. His time to stop a war. But these insane Zionists, this is what they want. This is what they've been waiting for. This is what their plan was the entire time. This is where, you know, Miriam Adelson's $100 million comes into play here. You know, and I didn't want to believe that this president was capable of this. I thought for a second that when he, you know, reposted, you know, Jeffrey Sachs' criticism of Netanyahu, that this was sincere, but it turns out that he was playing the American people just like he played the Iranians. This president's a liar, inveterate liar, straight up liar. And he can't be trusted. He's lost the trust of the American people. And if he goes to war against Iran, he's lost the trust of his base. And as Tucker said, that's the end of this president. He may serve out his term, but he'll serve out his term as an angry man, a prisoner in a White House, unable to go out in the rest of the nation because he'll be openly despised. The military that claims to love him right now will hate him and revile him because he got them in a conflict where thousands will lose their lives and it will achieve nothing. And it's all done for the glory of Israel. I mean, this administration bothers me across the board. From RFK Jr., who is a friend of mine, and his love affair with Shmuley Botek. And no, it's not good. You know, we can go Kash Patel. What's your number one priority as FBI director? The security of the state of Israel. Well, you know what, Kash? Stick it in your ear. It should be the security of the United States. Israel is the greatest threat to America. That's what I don't understand. Why does not Kash Patel understand that we've been thoroughly penetrated? Kash Patel, you're the director of FBI. What do you think about Israelis feeding the president of the United States misinformation that will put American lives at risk? That's the kind of stuff you and your National Security Division are supposed to stop. How would you feel, Kash, if the Russians had a direct line to the president and were whispering sweet nothings in his ear and he was taking action on it, disregarding the advice of his director of national intelligence? Isn't that a national security problem, Kash? But no, you're sitting there just playing the game. Dan Bongino. Mr. I'm real American here. I'm all about America. America first. We're really good. Dan Bongino, you just rolled over and played dead to Israel too. What the hell do they have on you? Epstein, foul my ass. I mean, you know, you sat there and talked about it. Now you just swept it under the rug. Maybe it needs to be swept. I don't know. But I mean, you know, it sounds to me like you all have been taken hostage by Israel. This country has been taken hostage by Israel. Israel is the greatest threat to the national security of the United States of America. The greatest threat. AIPAC is their army here in America. It is a literal foreign agent. I had the FBI come in my house and accuse me of being a foreign agent because of things that I wrote. AIPAC is buying Congress. They have bought Congress. They bought a president. They've bought our military. We're getting ready to go to war on behalf of AIPAC and Israel. Guys, this is insane. Now, I'm probably going to get you kicked off of YouTube for this, but I'm sorry. You ask me a question, you get the answer. Israel is the greatest threat to the United States of America, and we have the agents of Israel having infiltrated every aspect of our government. And we, the people of the United States of America, are just sitting back and letting it happen.
Scott, do you believe that Donald Trump gonna go to some extent against Iran, as we saw with the tariff war, and he's gonna back down if he feels that he's not gonna get what he wanted to get? We saw not just with the tariff war, we saw it with Yemen as well. How do you see the possibility of that going to some extent against Iran, then finding that is not working for him and coming back? And because that, if that happens, it comes when look at Russia. They attacked Russia. Donald Trump called the day after, called Vladimir Putin, said, "I didn't know about it." I don't know what's going on in the mind of the Russian president right now, as the conflict in the Middle East is going to get more problematic. And he would say that what Donald Trump said to me was a lie, because how can you not know about an attack on Russian nuclear bombers? And I'm talking about the bigger picture, the bigger picture on the part of Russians, Iranian, and Chinese as time goes by. Even if Donald Trump tries to back down, that doesn't help his position if it goes in that direction.
Let's just start with the fundamental understanding that Donald Trump is a moral coward and a physical coward. He's not a brave man. He's not a man of integrity. He doesn't have principles. He goes through the path of least resistance. And as we've seen, every time he runs up against a wall of, you know, solid resistance, he backs down. He doesn't stand for anything. He makes bold pronouncements and then just reverses it and then lies about it. On Iran, if the Iranians stay the course, and as long as they don't do anything precipitous in terms of like attacking American bases and things of that nature, unprovoked, well, I mean, they've already been provoked, but Iran's first goal should be the physical destruction of Israel, the defeat of Israel. Their second goal should be to keep America out of this war, which means as they achieve the physical defeat of Israel, they need to not do anything to allow America to be dragged into this conflict. And if they do that, look, Trump has already recognized, you can read his face. The man is not a poker player. The man is angry. The man is frustrated because he was promised a victory that isn't manifesting itself. And now he's trying to puff up and be big to intimidate people. Well, as he learned with tariffs with China, that doesn't work. Chinese went, yeah, okay, good. So what? So now Trump had to lie. The Chinese called me begging me to do this, so I've done it, and now we're backing down. He's a liar. Straight up, like China's like, no, we didn't call him. Didn't call him. Nobody calls him. Nobody calls to surrender. Who didn't call to surrender? You know, Donald Trump cut a deal because he had to. His Navy was getting humiliated. And on Iraq, as long as the Iranians stay the course, Donald Trump will back down because he didn't have the courage to follow through. Because what he's going to have to do is receive the briefing from somebody, the official briefing that says, if you do this, this will happen. And what's going to happen is going to be horrible. And you're going to have to stand before the American people and explain why thousands of their sons and daughters are coming home in body bags. He doesn't have the courage to do that. He doesn't have the courage to do that. So he'll back down. That's my belief. He's getting bad information, you know, intelligence information, but at some point in time, the Pentagon's going to have to brief him on the realities. When George W. Bush was briefed on, you know, the invasion of Iraq, he was told, we will win. And we did. There is no military officer who's going to tell the president we're going to win against Iran. Because to defeat Iran is going to require the physical occupation of Iran, and we can't do that. We can't do that. And, you know, whereas there may have been a chance for regime change in Iran, you know, playing upon economic difficulties and things of that nature, which is why Trump, if he truly wants regime change, should have dragged out the nuclear thing to extend sanctions and to, you know, increase a feeling of frustration amongst the Iranian people that hopefully from the American perspective manifested against, you know, discontent towards the theocracy. But by bombing Iran, I think he's achieving the exact opposite reaction. I think the Iranian people are circling their wagons, and it's going to be impossible. Even if you, I mean, when you have, you know, Khamenei come out and say, I am just a body. My martyrdom should not change anything. It's our faith and our, and he's right. So they kill Khamenei. It's tragic for him. Somebody will replace him in a system now that's becoming more and more entrenched into Iranian society because of the Israeli actions. So Iran's becoming virtually undefeatable because you can't bomb them into submission, and what you can't physically occupy it. And if Iran starts receiving a lifeline from Russia and China and Pakistan and others, not just military, but economic, diplomatic, this president's going to find himself in a unwinnable, untenable situation. Now, if he was receiving good briefings from the State Department, you know, we'd be done. But, you know, remember, Rubio is a dual-headed fool right now. He's also the head of the National Security Council. So the only people left that can save America in terms of this being honest with this president, because he won't listen to Tulsi, is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the war-fighting military, not the Secretary of Defense, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And they're the ones that have to tell the president what the consequences of, you know, of military action against Iran would be. And I'm hoping, even though they replaced and they put in this insane lunatic as the chairman of the JCS, I'm hoping there's people down the chain of command who will have the enough integrity to tell the president, you don't want to do this because here are the consequences. He needs to be briefed on the consequences. And once you brief the coward on the consequences, he'll back down.
Scott, the day before Israel attacked Iran, J.D. Vance was asked if Iran is pursuing nuclear weapon. He said that they were talking about, we're going to attack. You remember those hours, that a lot of tensions going on in the media. And he said, I don't know. It was somehow, I talked with Alex Craner on the show, and I said, Alex, this guy said, I don't know. The same quote came out of the mouth of the U.S. government before going to Iraq. Maybe that's going to happen. And it happened. And do you see J.D. Vance differently? Do you see that J.D. Vance been in a position to influence the situation? Because in my opinion, the only sane voices in the Trump administration would be Tulsi Gabbard and J.D. Vance. I don't know if he's able to do anything about it if he goes against Donald Trump.
Well, J.D. Vance has a lot of credibility amongst the MAGA crowd. He is, after all, MAGA vice president. But it's interesting what Trump is preparing to do, at least according to some reports. He wants Vance and Witkoff to go to the Middle East and negotiate with the Iranians. But he's going to hand them a losing hand, meaning zero enrichment. And if that fails, in typical Trump style, he'll say, well, J.D. Vance let me down. J.D. Vance disappointed me. Steve Witkoff. So the two people that have more credibility than Donald Trump right now is Steve Witkoff and J.D. Vance. So I think he's setting them up to fail. I think he's sending them out on a mission impossible. And when they fail, as they're destined to do, he then can diminish their political influence so that Witkoff can't talk about, because right now he's scared of Witkoff, because Witkoff knows the truth about the negotiations and what Iran was ready to agree to. So Witkoff has to be politically neutralized. And so does J.D. Vance, who is a relatively honest broker close to Tulsi Gabbard, who knows the truth. And so he needs to be politically neutered, and sending these two off on a Mission Impossible, I think is the mechanism that we use to achieve that outcome.
Thank you so much, Scott, for being with us today. Great pleasure as always, and hope nothing gonna happen.
We'll find out.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.